Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
Let's go.
Happy Monday to you, North America. The mothership has connected. Welcome aboard. It's the 3-hour Constellation Kegger. DA with you from the CBS Sports Radio studios in New York City, broadcasting to affiliates nationwide and north of the border. Anchorage to Atlanta, Boise to Baltimore, Kalamazoo and Waterloo. We are on the air.
They listening, D.A. Everything we saying, D.A. Everything.
And we come to you live from the Rockin' Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. Home is so much more than a house. It's the home of your dreams. And so for 30 years, they've been making it better. Rockin' Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. How are we doing, everybody? Man. 3 hours, not enough today. There is so much to get into. The Nationals had a 2-0 series lead and now trail 3-2. They came back home for 3 and couldn't get a win. I could not have been more wrong. We'll discuss this World Series coming up here in just about 15 minutes from now. Also, Freddie Kitchens losing the locker room and football games. The Niners could be the best team in football. Matt Nagy is losing his mind. Drew Brees steps in and never missed a beat. We'll have NFL Network reporter Steve Weich and Joe Flacco getting testy with his coaches in the post-game press conference. All of that coming up this morning on the show. So you want to jump in on any of those topics? Questions, comments, concerns, complaints? Let's do it. Here's your phone number. There is so much. 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. Hit us on Twitter as well, DA on CBS. We begin with the Sunday nighter at Arrowhead Stadium. Even without Patrick Mahomes, give the Chiefs credit, because Matt Moore helped lead the Chiefs last night and didn't really look like a true backup. Looked like he was capable. Looked like he could actually get it done. And Andy Reid, once they fell behind 14-0, really opened up the playbook. Truly started digging into creative ways to move the football. And this is why it's kind of crazy that Andy Reid has never won a Super Bowl. Because you see performances like that last night and say he's just one of the most creative minds in NFL history offensively. And there's so much skill, position, talent in Kansas City that even without Mahomes, the Chiefs offense can do really exciting, cool things. But last night was not about Matt Moore, was not about the Kansas City Chiefs. It was about Aaron Rodgers. It was about Rodgers and about that Packers team that was humming early, up 14-0, and then got it done late. And the story is not just how brilliant Rodgers is and can be, because his falling away, no look, touchdown strike, back of the end zone, from about the 18 or 19 yard line, which also sailed 10 yards into the back of the end zone, was just something to start off the fourth quarter that only he can do. He is playing quarterback at a crazy high level. He puts it in the only place his receiver can get it, back of the end zone, as he falls down, as he gets tackled, nearly a no look. I mean, what can you say besides we're watching somebody play quarterback at perhaps a higher level than anybody ever has done it? But the story is not just Aaron Rodgers' brilliance. It's also the Packers. And it's the Packers with a running back, the Packers with a defense, and the Packers with a head coach that might give Rodgers his best chance at a Super Bowl since his only one in 2010. Is this the best supporting cast, the best team that Rodgers has ever actually played for and with? It's where we begin. Your cold open.
Rodgers alone in the gun. Jones motion. Snap to Rodgers. Quick toss. Jones gets a block. Cuts it back. 40. 45. 50. He's off to the races. Down the left sideline. To the 15. 10. 5. Touchdown. Aaron Jones. Oh, what a play.
Well, we're playing a lot better. You know, last year we couldn't win a game on the road. This year we've won in Chicago, Dallas, and Kansas City. That's three pretty tough places to play. So, you know, we're playing a lot better.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes!
It's your cold open.
So nonchalant. That was Wayne Larrabee and Packers Radio on the call. Rodgers had 305 for three touchdowns and no picks last night, but the Chiefs got after him. The Chiefs sacked him five times. What we saw last night was when it mattered, the Packers could run the football. That final drive to not give the Chiefs the football back was a thing of beauty because they just ran the football down the Chiefs' throats and forced the Chiefs to take the timeouts and then still picked up the first downs. And when you see Aaron Jones out there, not only able to rip off 5 yards per carry, but also rip off the 67-yard reception, have two touchdowns through the air, and be such a dual threat, you realize that these wide receivers, especially without Davante Adams, is not as good as some of his wide receiver tandems of the past. But his rushing attack along with his receivers is phenomenal balance. And the defense, the Packers defense, when it mattered and when it matters, can get after the quarterback, can create some big plays, then can create turnovers. This Packers team might not have the star power of that 2010 team that won the Super Bowl, but boy, this is a great supporting cast for Rodgers, and they're showing it at 7-1. And give Matt LaFleur credit as well, because as a first-time head coach, he is looking the part, and that team is playing well into the midpoint in the season. 7-1, boy, you take that every single time. Packers are loaded and playing great football. Here's your phone number, 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Twitter, DA on CBS. Also, think about what the NFC playoffs are going to look like. Let me just throw out a potential scenario for you, okay? Here is what the six teams in the NFC playoffs might be. Might be. Let's say your wild cards are the Seattle Seahawks and the LA Rams. Okay, let's just hypothetically say the Seahawks and the Rams are your two wild cards out of the NFC. And let's go ahead and say the one and the two seed, let's just say it's San Francisco and New Orleans. Okay? Then let's put in there the Packers and the Cowboys as division winners. That means wild card weekend. You could have, let's just say, Rams at Green Bay, Seahawks at Cowboys. Let's just fast forward to a divisional round weekend of the NFC. How about Seahawks, Saints, Packers, Niners? I mean, these are heavyweight matchups. There are six teams, and I did not bring up the Minnesota Vikings, but there are six or seven teams that today can say, we truly believe we can win a Super Bowl in the NFC alone. Now, flip that around to the AFC, it feels like it's the Patriots, and then a huge drop-off, an enormous drop-off. I mean, I venture to say, as good as the Pats are, if New England was in the NFC, they wouldn't get out of divisional round weekend. I'd venture to say, in a matchup in the playoffs, I might take three or four NFC teams over the Patriots. That's how good this NFC is, and that's how loose the AFC is. But my goodness, the NFC postseason is setting up to be absolutely brilliant. Could you imagine? Aaron Rodgers ends up at 14-2. Drew Brees ends up at 14-2. And one of them doesn't get the bye because the Niners end up going 15-1. I mean, look, I think that there's a couple of losses in the second half of the season for San Francisco, but how damn balanced are they? How powerful are the Niners? How well coached are the Niners? You think about this, the Saints, the Packers, and the Niners could all be 13-win teams this year. Could all be 13-3 or better, and one of those teams will not have a bye. That's how good the NFC is this season. The NFC playoffs are going to be ridiculous. Right now, clear your schedule. Make sure you're not doing anything on wildcard weekend or divisional round weekend or the NFC games. The AFC games, you could probably go out, do some Christmas shopping, what have you. Well, I guess Christmas will be over. So return some Christmas gifts. Prepare to shovel. Do something else. You can get away with it. The NFC playoffs are going to be must-see television each and every game. So much to get into from the NFL over the weekend. But when we come back, we got to talk about this World Series as well. Because last week, when the Nats were up 2-0, going back home, I declared the series over, that it wasn't even going to go back to Houston, that the Nats were going to get two of the next three and wrap up the World Series at home. And I could not have been more wrong because the Astros have taken the last three. They have Verlander on the hill in game number six. Max Scherzer had to be scratched. And the sky is falling in D.C., have the Astros already won the World Series? We'll discuss next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
It's the DA Show, only on CBS Sports Radio.
Boss cuts that now. Looks at the runner. Now delivers. And that ball's hit well.
Left field, high and deep. That's got a chance. Score! Carlos Correa with a two-run shot. Gives the Astros the 4-0 lead.
I told him, I said, I know we're going to go 1-0. I said, but we're going to play game seven. I believe that, so keep pushing. When he came in this morning, we told him he's definitely going to start. I thought he did really well. I really did. And I told him, I said, hey, we want to keep him at right about 80 pitches, and he gave us five good innings.
The Washington Nationals are on the cusp of getting pushed right out of the postseason, right out of the World Series after having a commanding 2-0 series lead, going back home for three. That was Astros Radio and Dave Martinez following the game. So glad you're with us here on a fine Monday morning, everybody. Talking NFL, talking college football, talking World Series. Here's your phone number, 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227 on Twitter. DA on CBS. And remember, full episodes are available of The Da if you just go to iTunes or radio.com or cbssportsradio.com or anywhere else that podcasts are available. It's an Ask the Pros day where you get to pick a question, any question, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simply tweet at me, DA on CBS, and be listening later on to the show and we'll answer that question. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Once the Washington Nationals took the first two games and had beaten Cole and Verlander and were going back home to D.C., I declared the series over. Look, they had done the toughest part of winning the World Series. They had beaten Cole and Verlander and did it on the road. Everything else should have been child's play after that. Gerrit Cole had not lost in 6 months. He had not lost since May 22nd. And to not only beat Cole in game one, but then Verlander in game two, and do it both in their ballpark when they had the DH, I said, forget it. The Nats were white hot coming into the playoffs, got through that incredible early round series against the Dodgers, swept through the Cardinals, won the first two in Houston, and they had all of the energy, all of the momentum, all of the everything going back home. They only had to win two of the three, and they had gotten through Cole and Verlander. To me, it was game, set, match. Oh, but I was wrong. Oh, I was so wrong. I was so wrong because even though the Astros didn't look anything like the Astros in the first two games, the Astros still had the championship DNA. And who would have thought that the Nats' bats would become so silent? And since going up 2-0, which now feels like a year ago, the Nationals lineup has been absolutely brutal with runners in scoring position. I mean, it was up to Zach Greinke on the road to save the Astros season. And he did it. And then it was up to a bullpen game to save the Astros season. And they did it. And then what? It's 2-2 yesterday. And the Nats can at least say, well, we've got our ace. We've got our Scherzer. He's going to go to the ballpark. He's going to start. And he gives us an unbelievable chance to win. And at the very least, we're up 3-2 going back to Houston. And the ghost came out. Who could have seen this? The ghosts come out. Scherzer scratched. Scratched. An hour before the game. Get scratched. Back spasms. I mean, Max Scherzer, who is their everything, an hour and a half before the game gets scratched, and how can you not think that this is just another DC gag? This is just another DC sports choke job. I mean, do these people deserve that? They had all this hope. I mean, if you're going to lose, why build up the hope that much, that dramatically? But the Astros going to Washington and winning the last three games in as impressive a fashion as they have remind you of just how good, just how deep, just how talented this team is. I mean, and look at the bats. It's Bregman one night. It's Alvarez the next night. It's Correa the next night. I mean, these guys have a lineup that doesn't quit. Their manager right now is pressing all the right buttons. And they just went to D.C. on a business trip to take all three, and they did it. And they did it in impressive fashion. And I was dead wrong, and we should cue up the tape right now because I didn't see this coming, but my fine fleshy friend did. I said series was over. It was 2-0. The Nats were winning the World Series. I saw no life, no spark, no nothing. And the toughest part of the job was already done by the Nationals, up 2-0 on the road against Cole and Greinke. Cole and Verlander, rather, with Greinke to save the season. And Mraz made a comparison to a historically remembered team, and he could be absolutely right on.
The Astros are too good and too dangerous. They just came off that series with the Yankees. Take a day off, get a little breather. This series is not lost. Three teams, as I've mentioned, came back from 2-0 down, losing the first two.
I mentioned.
That's right, as you've mentioned.
Yeah.
I was talking about the topic list, which okay. I inserted them. Okay. I think Houston gets a little juicier. I actually think the Astros are going to run off the next four in a row and win the series in six.
So you think this is 96 Yankees all over again?
I do. I think this is like the 96 Yankees series.
They ain't winning all four straight. They're now winning all four straight. My bad.
I am the epic fail.
Excuse me. My bad. As the Astros have Justin Verlander on the hill at home in a game six to do exactly that.
My bad.
Look, I was dead wrong, and I'll say this. Verlander better close out tomorrow night because he had a chance to close out against the Yankees and did not do that, spit the bit in that one. But, Mraz, I bow to you. You saw the 96 Yankees comp, and this is exactly what's probably going to happen. Astros in six?
Yeah. Look, the better, more dangerous team usually prevails in a seven-game series, but the Nationals felt so much like the Braves in 96. Dominant front-end starting pitching, young star like Andrew Jones and Juan Soto, but ultimately, when they got back home, bats would get tight. The loosey-goosey attitude of playing on the road, who cares, we don't know any better, would come back to bite them, and that's exactly what's unfolded here.
Although, let's be fair, Strasburg on the hill in game number six gives the Nationals an amazing chance to win this game.
Of course it does, and this could be Strasburg's final game in a National uniform as he approaches free agency, so...
Oh, I thought you were going to say before he becomes a Yankee.
Well, no, because again, it could be Cole or Strasburg. I'm not going to necessarily definitely guarantee okay. both. It could be the Yankees. Yeah. But that could be the case. But Verlander, at some point, the guy's got to come through in the World Series, right?
Look, if he's known as the biggest gamer of his generation, him and Madison Bumgarner, he's had two chances to clinch in this postseason. He stunk in the first one against the Yankees. He's got to at home, up 3-2 against the Nats. This is where Verlander, if he is really a living legend, which we think he is, tomorrow night's the night.
Go find a way and just close. And I think they will. I think even if it's a tight 3-2 kind of game, the Astros are going to get this done.
It's weird, though. Would you agree that if you looked at the box scores or you looked at the final score of the last three games, really all five games, you'd say, a lot of blowouts.
It's been one inning at a time that's really blown things open in each game.
And it's been a great series, right?
I think it's been very compelling. Now, on an individual game basis, I think some of the games, especially when they got into those one big innings, maybe kind of stray away. But if you look at the series as a whole, it's a very compelling series.
It has felt as though the losing team in all five games was within an at-bat of tying things up.
For sure.
Maybe outside of that Game 2 Nationals runaway victory. But essentially every game has been like, we're seventh inning, we're eighth inning, and one big at-bat changes everything, and then there's been some late runs tacked on. I think this series has been amazing. I really do. I think it's been absolutely captivating. But the Nationals are down to their final breath, and Scherzer getting scratched yesterday because he woke up with a sore back. I mean, you can't make it up. This is just such DC drama, sports drama, that they are so used to the ghosts flying around. When we come back here on the show, we've got your best audio of the day. Tom Brady and the Patriots have mastery over a lot of teams. How good did they look yesterday against a bad Browns team? Also, Matt Nagy getting all too snippy with reporters, and Joe Flacco hates his coach. That's all coming up here next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Surge Protector, you're about to be zapped.
They put the glucose in my blood, Damon. Come on. Those cells are there. You know how hard a battle it is? It's uphill all the time.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
All that glucose. Welcome back, DA, with you here on CBS Sports Radio. As always, the DA show is available so many different ways, so many different kinds of ways. You can listen to us across the great CBS Sports Radio Network and all these wonderful affiliates. But also, if they don't carry the full 3 hours, well, that's a problem because we're on for 3 hours. And you can find us other ways. Sirius XM Channel 206 or on your phone for free. Use the Radio.com app, the CBS Sports app, Apple Music, or tell your smart speaker, hey, play CBS Sports Radio. And you can also watch us at watchda.com. Our toll-free line, 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Great news. Quick way you could save money switching to Geico. Geico.com, 15 minutes. You could save 15% or more on car insurance. Silver Fox tweets, D.A., see, you go and say things like there's three or four teams I'd take over the Patriots, the NFC. Then Tom Brady hears you, shoves it down your throat and says, and then you say, well, I don't understand why he says nobody believes. Of course the Patriots win. Everyone knows that. Hashtag, come on, Damon, wake up.
Come on, Damon, wake up.
Look, I can't control what Brady uses as motivation or not. I don't know the sports radio stations that he's listening to. I don't know what Twitter followers or what Twitter feeds he's following. I don't know what hot takes he's ingesting. I know this. If the Patriots were in the NFC, they wouldn't be the clear-cut favorites at winning the Super Bowl, or at least getting to a Super Bowl. Right now, the San Francisco 49ers are probably the most balanced team in all of the NFL. They're doing it all types of ways. And their defense is flat-out scary. And this is probably the first of many seasons where they're growing into a champion. The New Orleans Saints have a Hall of quarterback in real life, and a great defense, and an amazing run game, and a great coach. The Saints are, I believe, a better team than the New England Patriots, top to bottom. The Green Bay Packers last night showed again what a balanced franchise they are, and again, have a quarterback playing at the highest of levels. Two straight games, Rodgers has 300 yards, three touchdowns, and zero INTs. They can run the football, they play defense, and they've got Rodgers playing at an insanely, insanely high level. That's three teams right there that all are undefeated or have only one loss. And two of the three have Hall of Fame quarterbacks. I don't know. I mean, put the Patriots in the NFC. I'm just telling you what I see here. The Patriots are good, no doubt. They make bad teams look really bad. But if you ask me today, if the Patriots were in the NFC, where would I put them? I'd probably put them at three or four. And in the AFC, they're a clear, clear cut number one. It is what it is. Whatever their motivation is, they can only play the people on their schedule, no doubt. But you see it. We all see it. I mean, the fact is the NFC is the varsity. The AFC is the JV this year. And the Patriots happen to be the best of the JV. Whereas, who's the best team in football?
I think it's the San Francisco 49ers. And I don't know how you could watch football the first 8 weeks and not think that, other than you just don't want to believe yet. Their defense is unbelievably aggressive. They have the best front seven in football. And their offense, after yesterday, how do you not think they're so balanced? And Jimmy Garoppolo does it all. And look, I know the sex appeal, if you will. Am I allowed to say that?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, Drew Brees and the Saints, that's where everybody wants to drool over, and they're great teams. The 49ers, though, every part of that team is tough to beat. Every level at every unit, the 49ers are the best team in football.
Really well coached as well.
Yeah.
Every week you watch them, you go, well, wow, Kyle Shanahan has something else up his sleeve. They're organized, they're disciplined, they're physical, and they took a good Panthers team, and they just demolished them. Absolutely annihilated them. Okay, so if the Niners are the best team in football, who's the second best team?
I think the Saints are the second best team in football. Knocking on the door the last couple of years, and it's hard to question what they did without Breeze and now getting Breeze back.
The Saints' defense is incredible. They run the football really well. And they just got Drew Breeze back. Like, freaking Drew Breeze. I agree. I think they're a better all-around team than the Patriots. And number three, it's probably a conversation here.
That's where I would slide the Patriots in. I still have to give them an edge based on rookie head coach with the Packers. And obviously, Seattle, I still am a big part of, but I think the Packers are better than Seattle. So if I'm going to have the conversation, Patriots better than Packers, I would insert the Patriots at three. Though I think it would be an absolute dogfight between them and the Packers or them and the Seahawks in the Super Bowl.
I would agree. Okay, so let's even give the Patriots benefit of the doubt. Let's put them at three. It's probably Packers four.
Yes.
Seahawks 5?
Absolutely. That would be my top 5. I wouldn't think twice.
Okay. 6?
You're going to kill me. I would put the Dallas Cowboys at 6.
I wouldn't kill you. No, I wouldn't.
I know we've laughed at Jason Garrett and laughed and laughed. I think they are absolutely competitive, uber talented. I would question Garrett in a big game. I would give them the 6th spot.
Okay. 7?
Chiefs with Mahomes.
Okay. All right. Right now, without Mahomes, is it the Vikings?
I can't put Kirk Cousins at 7.
Fair. Okay. Would we put the Ravens?
Yeah. I would put the Ravens before I'd put a Kirk Cousins.
Or the Colts?
The Colts are too hit or miss with me and how they play consistently.
Okay,
you can't trust the Colts or Texans.
My point is, you have to get to the 7th best team in football to get to the 2nd best AFC team.
Correct.
That there are 5 NFC teams that are better than the 2nd best AFC team.
Correct.
And that's the thing. Right now, the NFC is the varsity, and the AFC is the JV, and the Patriots happen to be the best of the JV. They're very, very good, but the NFC playoffs is really going to be every single game, incredible teams colliding against incredible teams, and the AFC is going to be kind of a joke. We'll see. Mahomes coming back and healthy in January, and Lamar Jackson and how dynamic he can be, and the Colts are really well coached, and there are ways you can see a dangerous team pop up against the Pats. But in terms of overall, top to bottom, coach, offense, defense, depth, there's no doubt that the power teams were all stacked in the NFC this year. Let's get to your best audio of the day.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Speaking of the Patriots, in Foxborough yesterday, you saw one well-coached team and one awful-coached team. Bill Belichick wins 300 games. The only members of that club, Don Shula and George Halas.
You know, amazing to think that he coached for another place and they didn't think he was good enough, you know. And then he comes here and does a great job. So a great celebration for him and certainly hard-earned, well-deserved. And only better than 300 is 301. So we'll be back at it this week.
Ouch. You burned. Hey, Art Modell, you burned. Brady taking a shot at the organization of the Browns 25 years ago. As though Browns fans haven't been reminded of that every year for the last 25 years. And my goodness, we'll get into more of Freddie Kitchens coming up here at the top of the hour. That is a clown show. That is a clown show that's on fire. That is just one of the biggest disasters from a coaching standpoint. The Browns are perhaps the worst coached team in football. And that's saying something. Let's get to Matt Nagy. Speaking of really bad coaching. So yesterday, at the end of this game for the Bears, they are within field goal range, but of course have been kind of haunted by the end of the wild card game last year where Eddie Pinheiro ends up coming in because Cody Parkey gets the double doink, and they spend the entire offseason discussing Cody Parkey's double doink, and Eddie Pinheiro is the guy that's going to be strong enough mentally to be able to make the big kick, and the Bears won't have to worry about that. So Matt Nagy is within field goal range, but instead of running the football for a few more yards or throwing the football for a few more yards, he decides, no, you know what? I'm just going to take a knee, take down clock, not risk it, and line up for the game-winning field goal. Of course, that blew up in his face. The Bears miss. Eddie Pinheiro misses the game-winning field goal, and the Bears lose again on a botched field goal. Now, when asked about why he didn't try to get more yards, Matt Nagy, really snippy.
I'll just be brutally clear. Zero thought of throwing the football. Zero thought of running the football. You understand me? That's exactly what it was. So it's as simple as that.
Could you explain to him why not running the ball? What was...
Did I just say that?
Yeah.
What did I say?
It went on and on and on and on and on. And what was notable to me was Matt Nagy started off basically saying, I'm not going to answer questions about it. It's real easy, guys. And then kept explaining his rationale. Now, granted, he was asked three times about it. But after each question, he kept expounding upon it, which clearly is the sign of a man that needs to defend why he did this, which ultimately looks like a mistake, and a guy that's embattled. And for Matt Nagy, you know, it's got to him. The whole thing has gotten to him. That's very obvious. And, okay, Chicago might not be Boston. It might not be Philadelphia. It might not be New York. But it's got a media that's going to ask you some tough questions. And in Chicago right now, they're asking, how could the offense be this bad, this deep into the season with a quarterback that should be better than this and an offensive-minded head coach and things that are broken that should have been fixed already? And it's understandable that Bears fans and Bears media are antsy and aggravated and asking tough questions. And here is Nagy at the podium basically lecturing the media for 2.5 minutes about why he wouldn't dare do anything besides run the football. And I thought a damning moment of that was he says, well, you run the football and they know that you're going to try to run the football. Bad things happen. You're going to lose yards. Bad things happen. And then one of the reporters says, well, is that an indictment of your offensive line? And he gets all defensive again, which is a fair A plus B. Look, you don't feel confident lining up with your offensive line, running the football, when you think the defense knows it's coming. And the Bears' offensive line has been bad, really bad. And so that's the truth. And Nagy's going to come out swinging and fighting, but every time he tried to explain why he didn't, he seemed to bury himself even more. I think Matt Nagy's losing his mind. And I think Trubisky is clearly regressing, and the pressure is on, and they don't know how to get out of it, and it's just another thing. And look, even if Pinheiro makes the field goal yesterday, that does not make all the problems with the Bears go away. And finally, here's Joe Flacco. Here's a guy that absolutely hates his offensive coordinator and maybe his head coach as well.
We're now a 2-6 football team. And we're like afraid to go for it in a 2-minute drill, you know? Like, who cares if you give the ball back to the guys with 1:40 left? They obviously got the field goal anyway. Once again, we're a 2-6 football team, and it just feels like we're kind of afraid to lose the game. It's 3rd and 5 at the end of the game. You know, it's who cares if they have a timeout there at the end or not? You know, getting in field goal range isn't that tough. You know, so you're just putting your defense in these bad situations, and I just felt like, what do we have to lose? Like, why can't we be aggressive in some of these situations? That's kind of how I feel about a lot of the game today.
You know, I think Joe Flacco makes a lot of good points. I realize that Flacco feels to be part of the problem, not part of the solution. He's been so bad. But, you know, frankly, when you look at the Broncos' offensive output, it is staggeringly pathetic. I mean, staggeringly awful. Yesterday, here's the Broncos' final 6 possessions, okay? I'm going to give you the final 6 possessions. They end up losing 15-13. 3 and out, a total of 7 yards. 6 plays and punt. 3 and out, -1 yard. 3 and out, -2 yards. 5, and then they punted, and then 2 plays at the end of the game, which end up being just totally broken, awful plays. That's their final 6 possessions in a 1-score game. They had back-to-back possessions where they had negative yards total. You know, okay, Flacco's not great. But the play calling is a disgrace. And Vic Fangio looks in over his head. And the Broncos are just a nightmare. And he's right. They're 2-6. And so why not go for it a little bit? Playing conservatively. Scared to lose. These are the signs of first-year coaches in these positions, and they don't want to lose their job, and so they're going to try to keep it close, eke out a win, just try to keep it somewhat professional, and so that will help keep their job. I mean, when the Broncos, in their final 6 possessions yesterday in a 1-score game, their best drive is 6 yards and a punt, or 6 plays and a punt, you are truly in no man's land. That is your sound check. 855-212-4227. 855-212-4CBS. Your thoughts on the NFL weekend that was, on the college football weekend that was, on the World Series, all of that. We got your phone lines open for it at 855-212-4CBS. And on Twitter, you can get at me, DA on CBS. When we come back here on the show, hour number two. The 49ers are looking like the best team in football. Can they carry this through the rest of the season? Or will they finally come back down to earth in the second half of the year? Also, Steve Weich is going to join us from the NFL Network, NFL Insider. We'll go over the NFL weekend with Steve and some of these disastrous coaching decisions and moments. But coming up here next, speaking of disastrous coaching moments, was there anything more predictable than the Browns going to New England and looking totally outclassed? I mean, the Browns somehow had three consecutive plays with three turnovers. Does Freddie Kitchens survive the entire season? We'll get to that next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.